Welcome to ScotsCast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.
You may know the name Jim Thorpe. He was a Native American athlete, competed about 100 years ago. Before playing professional baseball and American football, Thorpe won two gold medals at the 1912 Olympics in Stockholm, the pentathlon and the decathlon. Back then, these included a combination of basic track and field events, not all the horse jumping and pistol shooting that we have today. And when it was time for the first event, Thorpe had a serious problem. He couldn't find his shoes. He could apparently run 100 yards in 10 seconds, but he couldn't do that barefooted. It turns out someone had stolen his shoes, and Thorpe decides he's not going to run barefoot. Instead, he does this. He goes to the bin, he finds two discarded shoes and puts them on, and goes to win gold. There's a hilarious photo of him with his hands on his hips, in a t-shirt, running shorts, socks pulled up high, with a loafer on one foot and a slightly more athletic shoe on the other foot. They were different sizes too, so he had to bulk one up with extra socks. One man's trash is another man's treasure. Maybe. That doesn't quite get at the situation. Something discarded is restored. That's more to the point. Shoes discarded, dispensed with. I don't give a second thought to old shoes I put in the bin, usually because you have new shoes. But what someone threw away, another man restored. To discard and to restore. This is what we see during the trial of Jesus in Luke 23. The shape of the passage is quite straightforward. Jesus is accused or charged. He's pronounced innocent three times, in fact. And then he's condemned to death. This different kind of king, as he is getting a very different kind of royal treatment. He's royally discarded. He's accused. He's dressed up in kingly clothing and passed off to the judge. And then he's interrogated by the law. I know not everyone here, I'm referring to us, might put Jesus on trial, so to speak. But there is one thing that everyone in the passage does, and that we do as well. The religious people, the powerful figureheads, and the lawman all dispense with Jesus. The elders, Herod, Pilate, they discard the king, the Son of God, the gift of life. And in discarding him, they condemn him. Discarding the gift. We'll need to come to grips with that. Do you know any demanding people? No need to look at anyone or point anyone out. I'm not trying to cause trouble this morning. We all know demanding people. And we're all demanding people from time to time. We want things a certain way. We impose. We might even shout out loud to make our demands heard. These people that bring Jesus to trial, the crowds, the Pharisees, the scribes, they really are demanding people. You see the charge in verse 2. We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. We're told that the charge comes from the Jewish leaders and the crowd. Now, this may only include the assembly that it brought Jesus to Pilate. I'm not sure it's a whole mass of people from the town yet. And the charge is threefold. I wonder what's correct here. What have they got right in terms of what they accuse Jesus of? Well, Jesus is the Christ, and he's a king. And people are getting stirred up by what he has to say. But these truths are being presented not for praise. They're presented for condemnation. Jesus doesn't categorically forbid tribute to Caesar, nor does he mislead the people. The people are confused, and they misinterpret Jesus. But Jesus is not trying to mislead them. Now, he is the Christ, and while they add Christ a king, wanting to present Jesus as a challenge to Rome, it's a beautiful sort of note to end on. Jesus is the Christ, and this is the path of the true king, albeit a different kind of king. To put it lightly, the charges may have that touch of truth, but they're not a charitable interpretation of Jesus' teaching or of Jesus' life. They discard the truths of what Jesus has done. As Phil mentioned, I'm a teacher, and one of the things we teach students in philosophy, one of the first things actually, are good and bad ways to argue. You'll know the straw man argument and the principle of charity and so on. Another good principle, a little more proverbial than those, is to chew the meat and spit out the bones, right? Keep what's good and get rid of what's bad or worthless. The crowd spit out the meat and keep the bones. We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. To dispense with or contort the truth of Christ has been a long-standing problem, especially among religious folk. In his second letter, John says that many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Such a one is the deceiver and the antichrist. These are heavy words, and they show us the importance of accepting Christ as he is, in truth. After the crowds, we come across Herod. Now, there's several Herods in the New Testament, and this is the son, one of the sons of Herod the Great. He was a king of sorts, and he had a lot of power in the area. He inherited much of that power from his family, and the Romans appointed him as a kind of local guard over the area. This Herod has John the Baptist killed. He, of course, came from a powerful family. He married the daughter of a king, and he did a lot of what he wanted. This was a man of power, and when he hears that Jesus is being sent his way, he's happy, even intrigued. He wants to see this man he's heard so much about. He's hoping to be impressed, I think. But Herod, as powerful as he is, receives nothing. I can't imagine what the scene would have been like and what he would have been sort of coaxing Jesus to do. But he gets no sign. He gets no spectacle. He gets no fun. Instead, he makes Jesus into a kind of play toy. He and his soldiers mock Jesus. They dress him up in nice clothing. And then they send him back to Pilate. Herod doesn't see that Jesus is a gift to the world. Herod plays with Jesus and discards him. We have people discarding the gift. We have power discarding the gift. And we have the law discarding the gift as well. The law. The Romans had a familiar legal process. You'd bring accusations to someone, charges would be formulated, opportunities for defense given, and judgment rendered. The accusations have been made, and now Jesus is before Pilate, Pontius Pilate. I always want Pilate to be an occupational name. Pontius Pilate, the airplane flyer, way ahead of his time. Along with Mason, Cooper, and Hunter, you could have Pilate. That's obviously not the case, and I'll spare you the Pontius Pilates jokes as well, but those are actually a little bit funny. He was a Roman prefect, basically a governor of the area. He had military, he had legal, and he had some financial oversight of the region, including the power of capital punishment. He pronounced Jesus innocent three times. Three times. And this, of everything in this chapter, this is one of the main things it's trying to convey. Jesus is not guilty. He's condemned as an innocent man. Pilate gives Jesus an opportunity to defend himself, and he finds no fault. This is what he says in verse 14, "Behold, after examining him before you, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him." I wonder if Pilate's trying to restore Christ rather than dispense with him. You almost get the sense that he wants to preserve this gift of life, this gift that Christ is, rather than to discard it. Perhaps he's the most human character in the chapter. As I mentioned before, my wife lived in Australia and moved to the UK about 10 years ago. She stored some things here, and she took some very tedious photos of everything that's in her boxes. And I was scrolling through those the other day, and I got to one, the last one actually on my list, and I couldn't believe what I saw. It's the box for an early edition of the iPod. Not an iPad, an iPod. And the box was in pristine condition. And the marketing at the time was a picture of Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow from the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. This is about 2003. It's a 20-year-old box. It's remarkable what we can hang on to, what we refuse to discard. There's no iPod in the box, I don't think, by the way. It's just the box. But the urgency with which the gift of life is discarded in this passage is also remarkable. It's remarkable. Pilate's almost stuck in this situation. It's like he's kind of looking at those old shoes, trying to decide if he's going to get rid of them. He's looking at these old boxes, thinking, what's worth keeping? The stakes, of course, are incomparable. But you get the point. The discarding of the gift of life. It's all quite to the point after this. The crowds are crying out, their cries prevail. And so Pilate decides to grant their demand. He gives in to the pressure. If Pilate did attempt to restore the gift of Christ or was waffling, he did not succeed. Jesus is discarded. He's tossed away by the people, he's passed off by the powers that be, and he's finally dispensed with by the law itself. The king is condemned. But remember, this is a different kind of king. He's a king that does not immediately claim his rightful place. He demands no justice in this situation. He exercises no power to save himself. And he does not defend himself against his interrogator. Jesus is silent before Herod. He says nothing. And as for the people and Pilate, he gives what we might consider a weak response. Basically, if you say so. Jesus gives himself over to all of it. He was very familiar with Isaiah, and I wonder if these words are playing over and over in his head. As a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. If the peoples and the powers and the law are all discarding Jesus, then we also have to say that God himself discards the gift. Hear me out. The final verse of the passage, verse 25. Pilate said to deliver Jesus over to their will. To deliver over, the key to this passage, the key to the trial is actually, I think, in this word itself. You see, it's the same word that Paul uses to describe what God the Father and Jesus himself do. In Romans 8, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? Or take Galatians 2, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me, delivered himself up, delivered himself over. Now, why would God the Father, the Lord of the universe, deliver his only Son over to death? Why would he put him in this world only to die young, innocent, and alone? And why would that Son, Jesus, endure this? The Lord gave him up for us all. Jesus loved me and gave himself for me. God gives Jesus over, and Jesus gives himself up for you and for me, for us. Now, we don't even have to wait for Paul's letters, actually, to know this. It's right here in Luke. It's right in front of us. Barabbas. We haven't talked about him yet. Our global stage has been re-familiarized with insurrection lately. And Barabbas is unquestionably guilty. Insurrection and murder. The crowds want him to go free in the place of Christ. And do you know what's so remarkable about the scene? It's a glaring, obvious, tangible example of a substitution. The whistle blows. Number 10 goes on. Number 5 comes off. I ask, can you attend that meeting in my place? We also have something like Wife Swap, Australia. Apparently aired in 2012 and is making a comeback for its second season in 2021. The point is the swap, of course. A guilty man deserving punishment is set free in the place of an innocent man deserving no harm. Is that not the story of the Christian? The very day that Christ is going to die, discarded by all, and there he is restoring a guilty man. I don't know what became of Barabbas after this, actually. I don't know if he thought this was his literal get-out-of-jail-free card, or if he had some remarkable thing impacted upon him. Maybe even followed the news about Jesus afterwards. I don't know. But I think he's not that shocking to us. He's not that scary. He's not that guilty, really. Let me risk getting a little closer to the bone. Harvey Weinstein, sentenced to 23 years plus 16 more so far. Let Weinstein go and lock Jesus up? You must be joking. I think if I really appreciated every page of the New Testament, I'd write that on the top. You must be joking. But God is not joking. And he gives his life for the sake of guilty, and I mean guilty, people. God discards the gift, Jesus Christ. Jesus himself gives himself over to all kinds of things he doesn't deserve. But that's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the story. One more thing. Romans 4. Jesus was delivered up. There's that word again. Jesus was delivered up for our trespasses and raised for our justification. God restores the gift. God restores the gift. Now, it's not Easter yet. Phil's getting nervous. I know I won't keep going. This is the end of my path at the moment. But if Christ was dispensed with so easily, he is restored with so much majesty. And in the trial, we get a little glimpse. We get a little glimpse of the good that is to come. I made a not very funny joke about Pilate having an occupational name. His name actually means armed with javelins, which would make for an interesting occupation. Jesus, on the other hand, has a lot of occupational names or titles. Jesus, Jesus, the Lord saves. Christ, the Anointed One. Emmanuel, God with us. Advocate, Bread of Life, Son of God. High Priest, King of Kings, and Lord of Lords. This is a different kind of king. He's condemned unjustly, and yet, for our sake, he's restored so that we might live. Those who take the name Christian take the name Little Christ. Christ's path is our own. In the face of misled demands, power plays, weak leadership, an unjust legal process, not sure what you're facing this week, what does Jesus do? He looks only to the desires of his Father. He puts the mission of God first. He knows his place on this earth, his role amidst a world that discards him. And he lives to love others. So let us go and do likewise.
You've been listening to Scotscast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.